realize, even though it's, you know, the world wide web, you know, I mean, somebody down in Mexico or over in Spain or wherever, you know, they don't give up. They're going to sit there and send out the spam, whatever they want.
There was
they always give those Nigerian letters.
Yep.
How many have you gotten that?
In fact, there was just a case the other day, Hormel Foods, which makes the tasty meat products, Spam, is starting to sue some of the companies, Spam Assassin is probably going to get sued, Spaminator. Some of the programs that are coming out to combat Spam, they're all using the word Spam in it. Well, Spam is a registered trademark of Hormel Foods, and they're a little mad that the unsolicited commercial email has become known as Spam, and it's Monty Python's fault. But so they're starting to sue these companies. And the other day in the paper, they had one of the companies getting sued, and they said the company, their website is based in Tonga, and the company president has a mailing address in Sri Lanka. So where do you sue him? Nobody knows.
Right, you speak to them, right?
Yeah.
They're rated for about 100,000 read writes guaranteed, which, as far as I'm concerned, is dang near infinite. I suspect that this particular medium and the longer one of this form factor, which comes out in the longer,
which is what?
This is the SD, and the longer one is Secure Digital, and the longer one is the Sony memory stick.
MS.
Right. SMS. Sony memory stick. And the reason that the Sony one is going to be popular is because they're putting in everything they have, everything.
Televisions, you know, stereos, a little bit.
Right. We all have it. And this one, because it is so doggone tiny, there is a watch now that you can put an SD card into and show pictures on your watch. Well, who would want to do that? I don't know. But the point is, you can now because these are so small and yet still have 260 megabytes.
They're becoming very popular also in a lot of printers now. HP has the slots right on. You put the memory stick in there, hit one button, and it prints all the pictures.
The other
cars are also coming with them in DVD players.
The other format that I've been seeing getting popular, especially in the high-end video arena, are the micro drives. It's a standard Winchester-type hard drive, no bigger than the size of a quarter. And what are they up to now? Two or 10 gigs, so 10,000 megs versus the 200 meg SD cards.
And they're not a lot bigger than this.
So your SD card is, you know, you have 256 meg SD card, you can put 1,000 email type photos on it, or, you know, 100 super high res photos, but only, you know, 30 seconds of video. So when you're looking at some of the video cameras, they're using the DV tape, so you get an hour on it. And I've also started to see some of them coming out with micro drives with a 10 gig capacity. To get even more data, especially in video.
Yes.
You guys preach Mozilla.
I love Mozilla.
I downloaded Mozilla.
Good for you.
It took over all my JPEGs.
It doesn't happen. What is the first time you installed it is what you wanted to open. You didn't uncheck it.
Didn't have the option. I looked for every option. And then on the screen, I went back to it for all of its tools and options. And I couldn't find anything there to change it back, uncheck it. But I've heard you guys talk about being able to...
File association.
Yeah.
What you want to do is...
XP or 98?
Huh?
XP or 98?
Wait, what is that?
Okay. No, hold on. That is the thing to be done. That's the question.
No, but if you go into, it's going to explore.
You've got to go into explore. If you go into option folder, type folder options, and there's the file.
Open any window on the desktop.
There's a couple of different ways to do it, like
properties.
No, not properties on the desktop. Open a window.
Open a window. What you got to do is
Open my computer. Yeah, that's the easiest.
Open my computer.
Right. Now open my computer.
Do you have the APEX on there?
And go to View. Tools.
Four
options. View. No, file types.
File types.
There we go.
You'll scroll down to find JPEG.
This is the list of all the file associations in your computer. So you can find a JPEG and change it to something else. A little easier way to do it, that Nick started out saying, is find a JPEG, left-click on it, then shift-right-click on it, choose Open With, pick the program you really want to use, and then highlight the Always Use button.
Okay, that wasn't good.
While you're on that subject, what do you think the likelihood that XML overtake PDF
and
some file swap?
XML is huge in business. Huge. So you see, XML and PDF are two different target audiences. PDFs are for data that you want to send to somebody, you don't want them to be able to change it.
And you don't want to have to make them have the program you use.
Right. So it's a read-only format. XML is specifically designed to allow you to massage those data with your own database. So it's two completely different audiences.
But I don't understand if you can change the PDF file.
No. Only if you're allowed to by the author.
Right.
The whoever creates the PDF can lock it so you can't change it, you can't print it, you can't resize it, you can't resave it, you can't do anything but look at it.
Now you can always get a screenshot.
But yeah, but you have to go through a lot of work to get there. Yep. Speaking of PDFs, by the way, there is another cool product that you probably need called OpenOffice at OpenOffice.org. The new version is about to come out. The current version will allow you to save a file as a PDF. Just basically write from the file menu. You might be exporting as PDF. The coolest part is, in the next version, in the presentation package, the PowerPoint package, you can export your presentation as Flash. Just pull down the menu, export, choose Flash, done. So for people who want to create a big presentation, send it to somebody without allowing them to change it or make changes to it. They may be on Macintosh, they may be on Linux, they may be on Windows, maybe you want to put it on a website.
You used to have to buy the $300 Acrobat Distiller to make a PDF, or the $600 Flash Development Studio to make a Flash. So this is a really neat ability. And
yeah, OpenOffice is free.
Yeah.
Is that available for use?
Yes. OpenOffice.org. It's the next version. It's in beta now to do the Flash stuff. But it's got a word processor, a spreadsheet, presentation package, all kinds of stuff.
We can get a link to that off of our website. Go to someplace.org. I heard this website in the show.
Pretty sure it's openoffice.org.
Openoffice.org.
That's where it is.
I have two questions. If you don't have any kind of a spam killer on your system, and you get hundreds or thousands of email messages because you've been spammed, is there any way that you will shut the system down?
Sure, it can overload your system. I mean, you run out of disk space, the email program just can't handle that much mail.
It's processing so much, handling the mail, your computer can't do anything else.
What are you using for your email?
Well, that's a direct, right?
So that
shouldn't really affect your system until you download each individual message.
But now, when you log on to check mail, and oh, you have 50,000 messages, and here they are.
Right. The problem with Juno is that when you read your email, you're reading it as HTML files. So you see all the colors and fonts and pictures. The problem is that there are a lot of viruses that can come to you through HTML.
Plus, it just takes longer.
So if, in fact, you don't have an antivirus program, and it's updated, then if your machine is crashing when you run Juno...
No, it isn't. I'm just wondering.
A The version of Juno I'm familiar with is basically a web interface, and everything's at their end.
Well, actually, I log on, I dial up their number, I log on, and I get Juno where I can read right from the web.
Mm-hmm. But it's all basically happening on their website.
Yes.
So no, that can't kill your machine. Okay. It can certainly kill theirs, but it can't kill you.
No. One dumb question is the one you don't have.
Every time I move, I get an error. I think all of it goes away, but
the
humanoid. So, have you ever
snaked it? Snake? It's a
screen catcher. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I snaked it, the screen catcher. How could
you
get rid of it?
Bless you.
Somebody wrote it down this time.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we love, people actually write down the error message.
A, B, S, Y, N, M, G, R.
What's the domain address?
Wait, what is it?
A, B, S, Y, N,
A, B, Sync Manager?
Yeah.
And what did I say about the program?
Right?
McAfee.
It's a McAfee. Oh, not it. McAfee would use the issue.
This is the
How about
what version of Mac?
Is it SMY or SYM?
SYM.
SYM.
So,
not Samantha.
Must be, I get it open that.
Do a Google search and see what comes up.
Yeah, see, I think this is, you know what? Let me suggest this, write this down. You need to download and run a program called Stinger.
Write
that
down.
It's at
SoundPoint.
Yes.
SoundPoint. Or good, I can like here in the I heard a website on your show. Or you can go to VIL,
Virus Information Library.
.nai
Network Associate Thing.
.com
Commercial.
/ VIL.
Virus Information Library. Good.
/ Stinger with a capital S.
Lowercase that's worse too.
Does it?
Yeah.
Because and that will let you demo bring the Stinger. You download that and run it, and what that looks for is one of a couple of dozen viruses that actually shuts down your antivirus program.
So it's the most virulent, or that can ever pronounce, viruses.
And
it
actually
does. It thinks it does.
No. Wait.
Sometimes.
She definitely can't. You know what it could be? Spyware.
Yeah, the next program to try is Adaware.
I have Adaware. Sorry, my name.
Do you want to take that with me? So you got to update that too. Are you using version 6? When it comes up, is it something like materialize slowly
yeah.
with the blue screen?
Yeah.
That's it. Just above the start button.
It says update.
Check for
update. Do that every time.
Yeah.
Now version 5, you had to manually.
What?
Yeah, with Adaware version 5, you had to manually run another program to check for the updates. For the free version 6, it built it into the program. The pay version 6 actually has a program called AdWatch that prevents the ads from getting in the first place.
Check for updates now. That's the one. You should do that before you run it each time.
In fact, it tells you right now, the reference file is 9 February because it is German. So this machine doesn't have the latest updates because it's 6 months old. It may.
Could be some spyware.
Some
program.
The deal is you've got to check for all these things, unfortunately.
And if you can search, if you can search your hard drive for that file, you may find whose file it is. Do a search and then do a properties. It might be a Microsoft file, it might be a Symantec file, a MacBook file. And then you know it's probably legitimate. But if it doesn't have a company name in the properties, or is it some weird path name, then it's probably some spyware that got in and is trying to do something and can't.
Change something else. Well,
there's somebody over here to stand up. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask a highly technical question.
Uh-oh. Next question.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a mouse that
yes.
You do not have it on the mouse pad when you boot up. You get the computer says we have not recognized that you have a mouse. I'll put the mouse on the pad, reboot.
I've seen that with the old-fashioned optical mice that had this special grid pad that had beyond. But not seen it with
a. Is it a ball mouse or an optical mouse?
I cleaned it, you know, because it does get dirty on the rollers. I cleaned it.
It's got to be a ball.
And it worked.
What kind of surface do you have when it's not on the mouse? Not on the pad?
Paper. Hard paper. It's not just paper or something like that.
Does it work after you get it running and take it off the mouse pad? Does it work okay?
When you put it back on the mouse pad and reboot, that works.
That's weird.
That's a little wacky.
Yeah, because when a system boots up, all it does is it goes out there. When Windows is going out there, it just looks for whether it's a serial mouse or a PS2 mouse. It just goes out there and just, yeah, it's connected. I can have that mouse flipped right upside down. I could be hanging it right here in my hand, and that shouldn't make any difference. Could be a loose wire that's
A good point. When you move the mouse, you're changing the orientation of the wire, and it may be reconnecting. Yeah.
Go up and pick out. It's a new one now. I mean, mine has buttons on the side that can sort of program. Go backwards, forward.
Remember that old mouse? What was it? We described it as a lump of clay. You went, "Arr."
Yeah.
And it sort of perfectly fit your hand.
Yeah.
The greatest mouse I ever saw, possibly the worst mouse I ever saw, was this giant thing that actually had a touch pad in the middle, so it wasn't really a mouse. But around it were a calculator keypad and about 15 buttons across the top to do, like, you hit this one, you're doing your email, hit this one, or no, this huge thing off on the side of our keypad.
The Kensington Turbo Mouse. has about 15 bucks. Yeah, it's a puck now. It's not really a mouse.
The optical mice, do they operate fairly?
I love them. Yeah, I get one and I love it.
They don't get dirty is one of the big... Yeah, we've got one back here. They don't get dirty. That's one of the biggest things. I have found that they can be fooled by the surface you're mousing on. We've got a couple of Apple mouse pads, so it has a big sharp A. So when I'm mousing across the A, it sees the A angle up and then moves the mouse up. Because basically the way the optical mice work is there's a camera inside watching your surface go by. So it's looking at like the tiny wood grains or the marble grains or the lines on the paper. And that's how it senses how far to move. While when it saw a big vertical line, it thought it was moving. So there can be issues with the surface it's on, but usually it's no problem.
I mean, you know, you can get a decent mouse, Microsoft Optical mouse, for about $20.
I like the wireless two-button scroll
option. What does that mean?
You can, depending on the section
you get it, you get it with serial port USB,
USB port, to the USB,
whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, USB, serial, or PS2.
Yeah. What
OS
are you running from?
Yes,
Arthur. What operating system?
98.
You're better off.
Yeah, get a PS2.
Yeah, you're way better off.
PS2.
Go
off.
Some questions about Real Player. I think I've heard you issue some cautions about it. What are the risks if you're using Real Player on Windows 2000 behind a hardware firewall? And does Real Player pose any risks on Mac OS X?
Yes.
It's not necessarily the risk of it, it's the annoyance of it. It installs, and that was mine by the my case. It installs a lot of stuff that it always flashes away in your system tray, especially in Windows, wanting you to buy the new version. And it's kind of like QuickTime in that respect. In this case, QuickTime. The first time you launch QuickTime, you get an ad screen saying, you know, do you want to buy it or not? But Real tends to, at least for me, it's to be a little more annoying.
Well, it's not real.
Well, the problem is you often need it because the Real format is a common format to use, the QuickTime format, the Windows Media format, so you need all these different players for all the different types of media you have.
Yeah, the real problem is you can't not have it, depending on where you go on the web. I personally don't have a Real Player loaded on my machine, and I just don't load a certain website. I don't care.
Yeah. I'm not using it either, but I want to know if this is worth it.
mostly it's an annoyance thing, and it slows down your system because it loads 50 things in the background.
Yeah, the real jukebox, the real player, the real start center, the real, we want to put a real button on your web browser, we want to put a real button on your desktop. And
plus it also adds in save.now and newsnet.net.
Right, and they'll just buy where you get rid of them.
So yeah, they've got their hooks in there and just tracking where you go.
No way.
Unbelievable.
I got a spool of water in the truck.
all we need is a couple of grippers and some...
grippers and heads, yeah. We just have to find a live jet somewhere.
I have several questions about routers.
Yes.
First of all, does the mechanical firewall, will that eliminate my need to have a software firewall?
Yeah, they're redundant, generally speaking.
And it's always better to have hardware do something in its own little box.
Yeah, that's resources that can be taken away from the CPU.
Right, so I'm going to buy it. And I've been collecting information. So one of my other questions is about the specifications. I know that my desktop is going to have an Ethernet card to be connected to the modem, and my husband's desktop will have a wireless card, and I have to speak to Dell about the Ethernet card, etc. But when I go look at what's going on in the stores now, there's a lot of price drops on routers. And I want to make sure that I understand the specs before I buy it, an open package. Such as, are there different speeds of routers? What other compatibilities do I have to be concerned about? And
are you getting the system from Dell?
I have a Dell computer.
Because if you're going to continue with it, they've got a fantastic router. They'll do the 11 megabits.
Well, yeah. There's two issues involved. There's a wired router and a wireless router. And if your husband's going to have a wireless card, you want to get a wireless router.
Yes.
Most, you can get one with both.
Right.
Yes.
Then, in order to...
A wireless modem router.
Well, wireless modem router is even different, and only Apple's the only company I know that makes one.
Right. You've got your modem. What you're looking for is the router, the wireless router.
Right. It's going to split your DSL connection to let multiple computers use it.
What you're going to be doing is you're going to be taking this DSL modem, and the cable right now that goes from there straight into your PC.
Right.
What you're going to be doing is unhooking that, plugging it into the back of this router. There's an area that says WAN, it's the wireless network. On the side of that, there usually is four or five jacks. I can now plug in up to four computers here.
That's something to watch out for, is how many wired ports the wireless routers have.
Why? What should I be looking for?
Well, how many wired computers are you going to have on there? Right. So if you buy a one port, buy a one port router.
Exactly. I will never get another computer.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did. More than one.
Well, then I'm
worth
it back.
So the typical a four port wireless router is sufficient for home use. You can plug four wired computers into it, or later on put a hub on and have more than four wired, and they run like 150.
Less now.
Well, I
see Lisa
says
that
Amazon
is
$39.99.
That's a wired router.
What?
That's not wired.
Wireless. Wireless will have, like, looks like two rabbit ears on it.
But I'm never going to move the desktop, so right. I could buy just
no, you need a wireless. It'll have the rabbit ears on it. Now your husband, he's going to have this other unit that's going to be wandering around the house.
Right.
Then you'll have to get a wireless card.
Yeah,
now,
if you buy only
a wireless card, it can talk to that hub because it's got the antenna on it. It's looking for signals. I could be traveling around my house. I could be in the kitchen 1 minute. I could be down in the basement in another.
Right, if you don't buy a wireless router, then your husband's laptop will have to have a wired card.
Right, but the deal is, you get the one with a couple of ports, four ports, say, and wireless, and you're most of the way there.
You can buy all the pieces separately. You can buy a hub, you can buy a router. Right. You can buy the hub separately, you can buy a wired router separately, you can buy a wireless router separately.
Right, you can buy them all separately, but you don't need to. You
right.
Buy them
the whole thing is one.
Right, here you go. You can buy only one piece. Now, what you're going to do
is the list of SRW41, I think.
We'll have an Ethernet card.
Right.
Right.
You want a wireless hub.
We'll have a wireless card. It is.
You want a wireless hub with firewall. That's right, bottom line.
Right. A wireless router. A four-port wireless router.
Four-port. And does it come in different speeds? I see it's 1922.
That depends on the card you buy. There's the A standard is 11. No, the A, I'm sorry, the B standard is first. It's all confusing.
Yeah.
The B standard is first, and it's 11 megabit. And that's the most common now. A couple of companies came out with an A standard, which is 22 megabit. Completely incompatible with the B standard. So if you buy A, you have to buy only A.
Does that have something to do with your speed, like DSL's coming, download, and
Hold on a second. There's several speeds we're talking about here, okay?
Yes.
Okay. You're buying this one little box. It has four ports in the back and two revenues.
Okay.
The way you connect with DSL, the outbound port, okay, the one that goes out to the world, whatever one you buy is going to be faster than your DSL connection to your
home. Your DSL is 2 megabits.
That's right.
Or 3 megabits.
DSL is only 2 or 3 megabits, so you don't care. On the inside, where you hook all your computers, all your one computer together, that can be 10 megabits or 100 megabits.
And that affects the upload speed?
No, it only affects the speed from machine to machine inside your local network.
Like if you're
because once you get out to the modem, you're going at the modem speed. DSL speed.
What he's talking about is if you want to share files with your husband.
We don't.
Sharing files from one to the other, that whether it's working 10 megabits or 100 megabits.
Right. But again, you don't care. Because it's not going to go faster than the card of your machine.
The trick is that you need to buy the same letter.
Well, we're talking about the wired end.
The wired end, yeah.
Okay. So far we haven't talked about the wireless part. This is strictly the wired end. As far as how fast it goes to the DSL and how fast it goes to your machine, you don't care. So let's put that whole side aside. Doesn't matter.
And they're all 100 megabit anyway.
Right. You don't care. Right. Now, when it comes to the routers and it comes to your husband's laptop, now you care. Because you have to match the card in this machine to the speed of your routers. Now, for example, he's got a card there that's probably a B.
It's a B.
It's a B. Thank you.
You made the product good?
That's the B.
That's much more common.
That's the most common one. And also, by the way, the least expensive one.
So that's 11.
802.11b.
And why would 22 be better?
Twice as bad. Better, not necessarily.
Much less common and much more, typically more expensive. The new standard now, we've got another letter, is the G standard.
Well, that's just something. Look for the best technology.
The G standard is 54 megabit.
Wait a minute. We've got 11 megabit, 22 megabit, and 54 megabit. On the other hand, when you get to your DSL connection, it's 3 megabits. So again, what do you care?
You're buying all that for what?
You buy a B router and a B card, or you buy a G router and a G card.
As long as the two letters match from the laptop to the RAM ears, that's all you care about.
The only
important question you have.
The big advantage of G is it's backward compatible to B. So if you have old computers with only B, you can mix it with G.
So what's the good advantage?
Linksys
is a good one?
Linksys a lot. Recon is good. V-Link is good.
Believe it or not, Dell and Gateway, they're both selling real good wireless hubs right now that I've had good luck in homes. That's always going to be a big factor, too. Now, I live literally right across the street. And because of the frightening police department here, I literally have 30 feet down the hallway is my den where I have my computer, my wireless hub. I can go down into the family room, 30 feet away, and I get a forced signal. Playing around with all the
channels. External interference.
Because it can be the wiring, and especially if you live in a super old home, it has the old lath and mesh in it, that can sit there and interfere with
wiring. I live in Shadow of Pimple Hill.
Wireless runs is a 2.4 gigahertz band, so it's the high frequency antennas. Your microwave oven can interfere with it. We've had a lot of trouble with kitchens because there's so much metal in your kitchen that getting a signal through a kitchen can be tough.
In addition, we have a lot of those cordless phones. Those are the same frequency.
There's a lot of information we've got. Most of it says I'm a little confused. You said it was a hub and a hubless. You're talking about a hub.
No. Here's what you want. You want to go to the store, whether it's CompuCenter or whatever, and you are looking, whether it's Latest, 3Con, or whatever, for a wireless hub.
No, a four-port wireless router.
They all come, but they're all
not necessarily.
Yeah, that's
most of them. There's one.
Not wireless.
There's two pieces, though. You can buy all the boxes separately, or you buy it in one box. The hub is the four ports that allow you to plug multiple computers together. The router is what lets you share your DSL connection. So you need to have a router, and most of the routers have a hub built in.
Most of the boxes say router for
cable or DSL router.
So, right. I mean, it is a hub router.
Yes.
Usually a switch.
Four-port router.
With ears.
Wired only routers come in 1, 4, or 8 ports. Most of the wireless routers are 4 ports.
And that's great, that you were telling me, but Steve sums up. Companies they used to, and I used to buy it for a lot of my clients, if I go into business, they've already got this huge hub already set up.
For all their hundreds
and they're bringing in Roadrunner. And they want, say, all 50 people to be able to get on it. Well, no sense of buying this four-port hub. So they had what they call it was just a switch. And you could literally plug the cable modem or the DSL modem into this hub or the switch. And then from the switch, go down to your whole hub.
It was still a router.
Yeah.
It was a one-port router.
It was a one-port. Yeah. But versus for cable. Most home units are now, and this is what CompUSA is carrying, is the four-port router hub with the antennas for the wireless. And you thought this was going to be easy.
We're going to put the antenna up for
an hour. I know, it's wrong with that one.
Can you get this to my husband?
Well, now you're on your own.
He doesn't want
it. I don't have a network. I don't want full wireless. What's wrong with you?
Nothing. There are products that will let you do that now.
Linksys makes one called the Power Bridge. It's
the problem is finding somebody to deliver Ethernet to your home via the power.
No, there's a new. It's a Power Bridge.
Oh, well, you're just talking about Power Bridge.
Right. It's an Ethernet to AC adapter.
Yes.
You plug one box into the AC, and the Ethernet coming in from your cable, whatever. Cable modem. And then the other box you plug into the AC and plug into your computer. The boxes are $100 a piece, so it's more expensive than wiring. It typically 10 to 11 megabit, so it's slower than hard wiring. And it's still faster than your cable modem, yeah. If you're sharing with multiple computers, you want it faster. And we've also had trouble on multiple circuits. You have two circuits in your house, you know, one upstairs, one downstairs, it may not work. You have to plug the bridges into the same circuit.
And it depends on how good your wiring is.
You must be very careful with old houses. A lot of them are not wired correctly. You must check every single circuit.
And there's no ground.
Old houses is anything older than the last 10 years. They have not. You go in and somebody's changed an outlet, changed a plug. You don't go in there and test every single plug and make sure they're all on the same circuit. Then you send line transmit one
machine. Well, they're on the same circuit.
Breaker. You might still share in a line or reverse the wire.
Well, I've got the same phase problem.
Yeah, same side. You have to have the same phase. They'll kill you. Just tell them over there.
DSL, 50 feet apart, computers don't want to get involved with networking right now. A company got second computer and got it.
Yeah, I'm just doing
sure.
that right now.
Sure, but there's no connection between your DSL and your dial-up unless you're using the same phone.
It uses the same wire.
No, yeah, but there's a filter on it. DSL has to go around on your phone with that filter on, so you can still make phone calls, which means you can still use that other computer to dial up and get up.
As long as you can put that filter on, you can, I don't think you can get DSL out there.
But for $39, it was a CompUSA, you can buy a 4-port wired router and have both computers network together sharing DSL on Amazon.
And it was Oasis.
Right.
With wire. All wire.
But then he needs the cards.
Ethernet in the machine, $15, if it doesn't already have it.
Yeah. $15 with Ethernet card, $15 with the cable.
Yeah. My husband's doing that now because we haven't really decided what we're doing. So that I'm on DSL, he's on dial-up. Yeah. That's a stable up on. And this is a
smaller weapon. Yeah, that's it.
It's very simple and not very expensive if the computers are in the same room. Where it gets a little more expensive is running wires between rooms and through the ceiling. And if you like doing that, great.
Yeah, but the wireless stuff
that's right.
Yeah, but
wireless is more expensive.
Years ago, we lived in a very old house, and years ago we took down the ceiling in the kitchen to replace it. And I said, you know, we have a ceiling now in the kitchen, which is like, we should have, I can get to every room in the house. Why don't I just throw some cable in there? So we can wire every room in the house. She said, no. Oops. About a month and a half ago, she's sitting at the kitchen table with what's apparently now her laptop.
He didn't bring it in on Saturday.
Yeah. And said, you know, I'd really like to get an Ethernet connection here. I just gotta get up and leave the room. I still have a scar on my tongue where I've been. I just gotta get up and leave the room. Now we have to do wireless, we have to do all this. I can't even get wireless. We're in Capitol Hill.
An old house that, you know, they put chicken wire up and then plaster on top of the chicken wire, and that's a great radio blocker.
Solid grid. Yeah, no wires.
Yeah.
Still down in here, had a question?
No, I've got a software question. I downloaded a construction project from the website, and there are files in there with the file extension of .prn.
Sure.
And I'm unable to open those files. I don't know how to open them. I don't know what program.
The print files, if you don't open them, you send them to your printer.
Yeah, you send them to your printer.
Yeah, but how do I send them to the printer? What
operating system do you have?
Windows 98 SC.
What you can do is open up a DOS window, and you can either say, well, it depends on whether they're text files or not. The easiest way is to say copy, space, whatever that file is, .prn, space, wherever your printer is, LPT1:, LPT2:.
Okay, I tried that. And what I got out of the printer, which is an HP940C, is garbage.
Okay. That it is likely that one of two things happened.
Oh, I didn't like to emphasize.
Ah!
I'm sorry. It says in the readme that's with this that these files were designed from HP LaserJet 4.
That was going to be one of my choices. You can't print them to anything else.
The command code is probably in HPGL command code.
And there's no program that...
I know of no program that translates from one to the other.
You can try PrintShop or EarthFanView. Yeah, go do Google search for open.prn.
Or if you really need to get to them, you can always copy them to a floppy and go over to like a Kinkos. See if they have an HP printer, an HP 4 printer there, that you could then say, you know, sit down and print them off to a LaserJet 4.
Okay, fine, that's what I needed to know. Thank you.
And that's one of the reasons PDF is getting common, that you don't have to worry about this kind of stuff, because the Acrobat reader is free for every platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back straight.
Yes, I've got a printer question. I've got a $700 printer. It's an Epson Stylus 1270, which now you can replace for $400.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait a couple weeks.
The 1280?
Yeah. Yeah.
The 2200. It's a really nice printer.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that too. But I don't know whether to get this one repaired because the manual with all the lights flashing on the printer as soon as you start it up, it says there's an internal problem. I call Epson and they can't narrow it down, so the repair could be $50 or $400.
There's a company in East Rochester called ABC Electronics.
Yeah.
They'll do a diagnostic. I think it's $50 to diagnose it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess didn't know if I should diagnose it or
can't hurt. Well, it hurts to $250.
Yeah. A replacement tabloid printer is $500 anyway, so that's your minimum exposure if you buy a new one. And the 2200 is a really slick printer, 7 color. 13 by 20 output size, has a banner feeder on it,
archival
ink, has a cutter on it, so you can put a roll of photo paper and say, give me 100 4x6s and it will cut it for you, and it's $699.
Worth getting it diagnosed?
At least diagnosed, the tabloid printers, yeah. Most of the time with the letter size printers, you can buy a new one for $50, so it's usually not worth trying to diagnose the letter size inkjets because they're so cheap.
Is there anything that's specific to the 1270 that when it comes to repairs, maybe the board always goes? Or
it's usually the print head.
Okay.
Which is,
and that'll just tell you how much it costs. If the print head is $400, somebody wants to give you one.
And that's one of the differences with some of the HP models. There's more consumables. You have a print head and you have an ink tank for each of your colors. That way, if the print head goes, then you can replace it. Some of the printers will put a single print head unit with your ink tanks in it. So when the print head goes, it usually can't be replaced or it's too expensive to replace.
Right.
So you want more consumables up front, or do you want which costs more, or do you want a more expensive repair in the end? And some companies go both ways.
Is that in the back here?
Yeah, way in the back.
Please, sir. Quick question. Downloading certain files. It comes up and says, cannot download, you must have maybe what the wording is, Acro 32.
That's the Adobe Acrobat Reader.
Is that an early version?
Well,
I have Adobe 5.
You need to fix your association tables then. If it's downloading a PDF and looking for an old version, say 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is that's the URL helper list.
Yeah. Uninstall Acrobat and download the link.
Try reinstalling Acrobat. That might fix the helper list. But the problem is that your web browser is looking for the wrong version of Acrobat and doesn't see you have a new one installed. If you do a right click and save target as, and then you'll be able to open it.
Are they up to 7 now?
6.
Yeah, just came out with
a few months ago.
So I'm in South Carolina.
What programs would you recommend to start on learning development?
Oh, what?
Linux. Learning about
Linux. There's a great
Linux for dummies.
There's a great version of Linux called Knoppix, and they pronounce the K. KNOPPIX.org. You download and burn the CD, and then you boot from the CD. Linux runs from the CD. It never touches your hard drive. So you can play with it all you want, and when you reboot, take it out and reboot your machine, you're back in Windows again. So you don't lose anything, you don't have a problem. Now, the downside is it's going to run a little slower because it's running off the CD. But you just be aware of that. You know, you're more interested in what it does, not in how fast it does it, because it's running with the CD. But Canonix will do that. I think they're up to 3.2, 4.2. I forget where they are right now. But you go to Canonix.org, download it, burn the CD, reboot, bang, you're in Linux. It's a very cool distribution. It seems to find most hardware. It seems to find most hardware.
So, well, the big problem with anything is, you know, if you've got some wet piece of hardware that nobody else knows about, they may have a Windows driver for it, but probably nothing else. But now it seems to find most of that stuff. And you're in, you're quiet.
One of the neat things on the Mac is Unix is already there for you. So you can open a command line and do whatever you want, because Unix is already there. In fact, you can boot the Mac in command line only, and that really scares longtime Mac users. No graphical interface, just the command line blinking at you.
Yeah!
A couple of years ago, I remember about every month you used to talk about memory leaks in Windows.
Sure!
I thought when I upgraded to XP that I wouldn't get it all the time, but I'm getting these results here.
Well, it's less frequently, but it's still there. It's
always cured by rebooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's memory leak. Sure. But Microsoft has never been really good at curing those. They just made the area they can leak in bigger.
This is just can't play one.
Oh, that's different?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do
with it. Yeah, this has nothing to do with...
No, it might. Now, hold on.
I think it
does. It might. It's 2.8 gigahertz, 512K of memory. With XP Home Edition.
What version of Windows, or what version of Internet Explorer are you running?
I think it came with AOL. Probably 6 or...
Yeah, it's actually loading with 6. What I've seen happening on there, when it won't display the page. Now, this is getting into dangerous territory, but what I've had to do, you go to click on a web page, or you start up Internet Explorer, and it just doesn't show up, no matter how many times you do it. What I found that corrects this, and I don't know how comfortable you are working in the registry, if you do go into Start Run Regedit, you do a Control F to bring up the Find window, and you look for WinSock2. You delete that entry. Do an F3 to find it again. There will be two folders on the left-hand side referencing WinSock2. If you delete that, shut down and reboot, it will submit those entries, but it cleans it out. Once in a while, and this has been notorious with version 6 and a couple of the patches, it just corrupts or messed up that WinSocket entries that are in there. You're to look over on the right hand side of it. And you want to get rid of those. And if reboot, it will bring you back up.
That's when you can't open any website when you click on a URL. It's, that's one of the things to try. After you make sure your internet connection is working to begin with. You know, getting an error message about can't open site or can't find site could mean your internet's just not working.
By entering the registry, I say, I don't recommend it, and that's why you'll hear us weekly, you know.
This is Dave Enright. Dave Enright. If you have a problem, it's Dave Enright. Don't call me.
That's why we say each week that if you don't know what you're doing in there, don't go in there. Because this literally controls how your whole system boots up. There are ways to recover from it. I do not recommend... Do not recommend it. Never been in there, going in there and just looking around. Because I've had people go in there looking around and accidentally hit the wrong key and delete some folders.
Now, to also fix your problem, you could go to the Microsoft.
Right there.
If you can, go to the Microsoft
web. Scroll down a little bit more. And you can hit F3.
Find it again.
It'll find it again. It'll find it pretty fast. It's not that far down. There's two entries on WinSock2 that you want to delete.
Delete the whole folder.
Yeah. You'll find the folder, you just click on it, and then you can right click on it and say delete.
Reinstalling Internet Explorer can also sometimes fix the problem. If you can get to the website to download it.
Well, even 6, though, will let you do a repair.
Yes.
When you go to add remove, it'll let you repair it. But I would first try, if you're comfortable with that, try going in, deleting those two folders on the left-hand side, shut it down, reboot, see if they can see it.
Back it up first, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Always. New investment.
Could you comment on what's happening between Apple and Adobe?
That's the
In what regards?
Premiere.
Oh, the Premiere issue. Adobe Premiere came out many years ago, and it was the premier video editing application for the home consumer market. Avid, its Premiere was only like $600, so that's the home market. Avid was the big tool in the professional market, and that was $30,000 for an Avid media composer. A couple of years ago, Apple bought a German company and eventually released Final Cut for video editing. It's taken Hollywood by storm. Most movies are now edited in Final Cut. Most TV shows are edited in Final Cut. So basically, Adobe is saying no one's buying Premiere anymore for the Mac, and you can't buy Final Cut for Windows, so we might as well not bother making Premiere for the Mac, because everyone's using Final Cut anyway. Final Cut's biggest limitation was it initially cost $1,000, but for the professional market, that's nothing. When you're used to spending $100,000 on two Avid stations, $1,000 for Final Cut was amazing. In the consumer market, it was a little high. So Apple a few months ago came out with Final Cut Express for $299, and that's a high quality professional type video editing application specifically for DV, digital video. It doesn't do the 24p, it doesn't do HD, it doesn't do 1080i. If you don't know what those acronyms mean, you don't need them. But basically, high definition work, theatrical movie work, you still need Final Cut Pro for. But it's an interesting issue that every time, and Microsoft faces the same problems, every time they roll in some functionality into the OS or release their own version of it, yeah, look at Microsoft Word. How many alternatives to Microsoft Word were there when Word came out? Now it doesn't. Now there's two. I think three and OpenOffice. So when the publisher comes out with their own version, it makes it hard for third parties. But it's kind of interesting that Final Cut got such a big big boost into the video world that it actually won an Emmy. It's the first time a computer company was given an Emmy for its advancements in the video work. And then they won a second Emmy for QuickTime 6, was it? I forget. I think it was the MPEG-4 encoder part of QuickTime 6.
You didn't forget.
Yeah, I have a Sony digital camera. I can take stills on a memory stick and then also have a movie tape. I have a laptop with Windows 2000. When I hook up the USB from the camera to my XP system, it recognizes the camera right away. But when I hook it up to the 2000, it says you have to load the software. I think it's called Pixel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to load it, and it doesn't seem to want to load it. I don't remember what the USB was.
I had that problem on the beloved OS that I love.
2000 had trouble with the early USB drivers, didn't it?
Yeah.
USB
you might want to check the CD. And I believe on that Pixel CD, there's a if you do an Explore, put the CD and do an Explore, there's a USB patch on that CD. There's another program. There's a folder that is USB. There's a program there. Try running that. It might have different folders underneath that. I can't remember because it was a while ago for the various OSs. I think there was one there for the Windows 2000. And again, that just patching the USB that we had to do back in Windows 98 too. But try that first. The other thing you might want to try to do is first, uninstall that software, the Pixel. Put the CD in. Try looking at the USB. Do the USB part of it first. Shut the machine down. Bring it back up, and then try installing the Pixel software.
Okay. Is anyone aware? I haven't been able to find this information in the book. Anyway, downloading everything that's on my memory stick into a folder.
What I use
on one at a time.
I've got a digital camera.
Well, it has to do it one at a time.
No, there's an easier way.
Tell it to load, tell it where to load. Excellent.
That should be the software that came with the camera.
Yeah.
Well, but, the memory stick is still in the camera, right?
Yeah.
There's a product called Dazzle. It's about $50 or $60. And the devil actually makes like 100 different products. But there's one that plugs into your USB port, and it's got a couple of slots in it, and it takes just about every
memory.
It takes both of these, plus that one, plus a couple of others.
Several different companies make the same thing.
And what you do is you plug it into that, and it comes up on your desktop like a drive. Then you select all, shove them over, wait till it's done.
The SanDisk models look like half a golf ball.
Yeah, that's what I've got for my camera. I open up Windows Explorer, it shows up as another drive. So I click on that folder, there's all my pictures.
So if you need this extra thing,
That's not okay. With my SanDisk, I put the memory stick in
there. Yeah, the part
and you see all the pictures.
And every single model is a 6-in-1.
So it does the CF, the SD, the MMC, and all
the different kinds.
Right.
So
there's the Dazzle 6-in-1 card reader.
Are you aware of any local users group or training courses that focus on Premier?
Not offhand.
No, you would not.
We've been trying to start a Final Cut group at Apple Cider, the Mac group. We've got a lot of people that want to attend it, but no one wants to lead it yet. Because most of the people that want to attend it are working all day long. I've checked the Adobe website to see if they have any If you're looking for training classes, you could probably check with New Horizons or Element K, whatever they're called this week. Yeah, but Adobe
JaxList.com lists every user group in Western New York.
Is that
Greenkey? Yes, Jack Greenkey is the guy who runs the
Jack's
List.
We've got to be more aware of something.
Mm-hmm. We did. We have about 5 minutes left.
Software
problem.
This is
going to
kill 5. System came loaded with Office Works Suite.
Software
Suite. So I got Office 2000. Well, Office Suite was 2003 consent system. Loaded on Office 2000, so I can use PowerPoint to go ahead and read the presentation. Then Word got confused. Okay, so at that point I said, let's get rid of it and go back to something that's basic. So I unloaded Office. I unloaded Works. I reinstalled Works partially. Well, at the end of the installation, I get a message that says Works unable to find Works services file. And then I get another one that says canceling the installation wizard. And then I get a message that says fatal error during installation. I say, okay, I go into my program list. Find Microsoft Works, find the word processor, I can click on it, open it, I can open the database, the spreadsheet, all the items inside it. And I'm going to get to use the task launcher.
Right, that's the service of program.
Right. Why do I have uninstalled, reinstalled, I can't drink this thing.
What it sounds, well, one of two things happen, but most likely there's a glitch in the CD itself. And so it's not loading that program correctly. That first error message seems to indicate to me that you can't find it on the CD.
I see it on the hard drive.
We ran into this problem. It's the Microsoft Works Suite set of CDs. It's what, 6 CDs?
A DVD.
Oh, DVD?
Okay.
But they still had a number of issues with the install, you know, because we did the Works program and then they threw in Word with it. And that was probably more...
Which is basically admission that Works is terrible. You should have bought Office in the first place.
Since you have Office, you might want to remove Works and just put Office on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the only thing I know is when I used the word processor, the old version that was in Word, the file sizes were much smaller. I've got some files that are a negative size.
There's a preference file in Word called FastSave. What FastSave does is it packs your changes onto the end of the file, So if you delete three pages, it just remembers, oh, delete three pages. It makes saving a lot faster. However, it makes the files huge. So instead of deleting three pages, it just saves delete three pages. So if you turn off fast saves under tools options, then it won't tack these changes on. It might take a little longer to save, but on a modern computer you wouldn't notice it anyway. It also, the fast save option also has a lot of problems if you try to import the Word file into some other program, if you want to read it into Quark or read it into PageMonitor. Allow fast saves.
Unchecked.
So when that's checked on, it just tacks your changes on and your files get really bloated.
In addition, you start every Word document at a minimum of 23K. You save an empty Word document is about 23K. The .doc format is very bloated. There's another format called .rtf.
All right, I started using that regularly.
And it's much smaller. But again, you need to get rid of that fast save. And if you've got pictures and stuff in your document, nothing will make those small.
No, I found that out on RTF also.
Right.
Yeah, RTF is an acronym for rich text format. It recodes everything as plain text, which allows you to transmit it to some other computer very easily. So if you have a picture in it, it encodes it as text, and the file will get huge. But then you open it at the other end, and you see the picture. The other advantage of RTF is viruses can't go through.
Right. You can't do viruses, and the other advantage is that every single operating system on Earth has at least one program that will read RTF files. The Office Suite does it, the old Mac Claris works.
Claris works, now Apple works.
Now Apple works reads it, Open Office reads it, or 602 Software reads it, WordPerfect reads it. Everybody reads it.
Speaking of word processing, is there anything that handles merge files like WordPerfect?
Nothing. As well or as cleanly or as nicely as WordPerfect.
We've got to stop because
we've got to get out of here. He's got that look on his face like, get out now or I'm coming after you. So we're really out. We're done. We can't be over. We have the update 30. I'd like to thank each and every one of you.
Now, party, yes, yeah, at Dave's house.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, guys.
Something in the background is doing something it should do, and the problem is finding what. The first two things to do are to run Stinger and run Adware to make sure you don't have any extra, especially on the internet. Yeah, Stinger will delete viruses, and Adware will delete the spy programs that can eat up your process in the background.
Do you want to stop recording the background though?
Everybody records.